Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. This is another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, a Wednesday edition of the show. Welcome back. We had to take a one-day hiatus as I traveled back to the Northeast from Arizona. Alongside myself, Lou DiBiase, I am joined by my co-host, Gino Camilleri. Gino, I'm back, and I'm feeling good. It's not really because of the Eagles sitting here at 5-7. It's also very snowy up here in Buffalo, New York, so not a whole lot going great, but it was good to get away for a couple days. I think the Eagles really made me need that, and we're going to get into it today. I think the big question that me and you hinted at on Sunday was, you know, after that collapse in Miami to the Dolphins, to make the playoffs or not to make the playoffs, because unbelievably so, the 5-7 Philadelphia Eagles still control their own destiny, making the 2019 playoffs, which is crazy to me. But me and you also got into, all right, if they do that, does that justify them keeping around Mike Rowe, Carson Walsh, Press Taylor, Jim Schwartz, those kind of guys? So that's what we're going to get into today. But Gino, I mean, when it comes to the playoffs, they get to play Eli Manning on Monday Night Football this week, which I'm sorry for the national fan base. That sucks that you got to listen to Booger McFarland and watch Eli Manning and all these bad NFC East teams. But, you know, it's crazy that, and we said it against Miami last week too, but here they are, primetime football. They get to play Eli Manning and the New York Giants. So it's tempting to not still see there's a little tiny glimmer of hope. Maybe it's just the optimist in me. I don't know.
Yeah, you're way more optimistic than I am right now about this team, Lou. I saw Eli Manning throw for 400 yards against them in back-to-back seasons the last 2 years with the same cornerback. So I'm not really overly content with this matchup coming up. It's a game that they should win. I mean, the Giants still have a very poor roster when you look at it. They're at the bottom of the league for a reason. But this Eagles team, it's just, I think the analogy of you going from sunny Arizona to downtrodden and snowy Buffalo, New York is a perfect example of what the season has been. We had all these bright intentions for this year. We're going to be in the NFC Championship game. We hopefully just run away with the NFC East. Carson has an MVP-esque year. And here we are. We're sitting at 5-7, off a loss to Ryan Fitzpatrick, and now going up against Eli Manning. This is just, you can't make the Philadelphia Eagles season up. It is something that, if a Hollywood storybook wanted to write a book about this franchise, they just could never do it. And this is a big game, and in two senses of the word, I want to see them have a good performance just for my mental state, because I'm going to root for the Eagles, of course. But just Wentz just needs to get a monkey off his back and grab a win. And just I feel bad for him, because after that performance, Lou, you tweeted about it, that you can't even remember this game of Carson Wentz, who had a very good performance in his own right because they lost, much like they did in Minnesota, much like they did in Carolina last year, much like they did in Tennessee last year. It's just very disappointing, and I like to see them beat the Giants all the time. So if Carson can go one more time and beat Eli before he sees his way out of New York, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it's very similar to the Minnesota game earlier this year, where I'm like, man, that was one of the games, one of the best put together, you know, four quarter stretches that Carson Wentz has had in a while, and the defense kind of blows it, so we don't get to talk about all those positives. It's been a month now since we've gotten to talk about an Eagles win, because there was the bye week after that Chicago win, and they've lost three straight games here now. So for Carson Wentz, just for our mental sake, our listeners, it would be big to get this win on Monday night. And like you said, yeah, look, Eli Manning has had success against the secondary when it's Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby, but basically anybody that's willing to target those two have had success. That's why I'm still a little optimistic, is maybe Eli Manning, the early Eli Manning of 2019 returns, where he's just checking it down to Saquon Barkley all day long. I mean, that's what I'm hoping for here, because that's what Eli has been for a lot of years now. If he decides to pick on Jalen Mills, Ronald Darby, even though they don't have the personnel, I'm still nervous about the matchup, but the Eagles should still nonetheless be heavy favorites heading into this football game. And it's just, like you said, Gino, if Hollywood was going to write, you know, a script about the 2019 Philadelphia Eagles, it's just, like, what would you focus on? Because even right now, you're, like, stuck between a rock and a hard place.
We're going to see it on
exactly.
Amazon, that show that Amazon's doing.
Oh, that's
year.
Right.
We're
going to
see exactly inside what is going on in this season. I feel so bad, because this is such a bad season, and we could have had the glory of 2017 if they went behind the scenes there. But now you have 2019, which in its own right is a very, very intriguing season because there are so many things that I tweeted about this the other day, the idea of proactivity and reactivity, and we talked about it on the show. And is this franchise going to be proactive, or are they going to continue to just fail to rip the Band-Aids off? And the things that I'm hearing, though, I like what I'm hearing. I mean, you get rid of Mac Hollins, who Carson Walsh said played well and ran good routes, which isn't very supportive of Carson Walsh and what he stands for, so probably see him on his way out. Mortensen said that he has a hunch that they'll probably want to do something big if they don't make the playoffs, which is, in Jeffrey Lurie fashion, has been what Jeffrey Lurie has done. I mean, look at that when they let Chip Kelly go. They let him go the game before they played the Giants, and then Shurmur took over. And look at Andy Reid as well. They're quick to move on when they realize that, yeah, there are big, big holes that need to be addressed, and hopefully they realize that with guys like Carson Walsh, who we've mentioned, maybe Jim Schwartz, Corey Unlin. I mean, you could go down the list and probably rattle off half of that coaching staff who you never want to see again, which is, in my opinion, something that separates great coaches from good coaches, because yesterday my fiance asked me, she's like, what's up with Ron Rivera? Why'd you tweet, come home, Ron? And I'm like, because they had the best coaching staff in modern memory when they had John Gruden and Andy Reid and Ron Rivera and who else did I can't
John Harbaugh was there too.
Yeah, John Harbaugh, Brad Childress. I mean, just the collections of minds that they've had in the Andy Reid coaching tree. Where's the Doug Peterson coaching tree, man? He needs to figure it out, and they need to put a foundation in place that supports their personnel, because they have the personnel, but even with the best personnel, if you don't have the coaches that are going to hold your players accountable and make them play for you and scheme them open and just light a fire under their ass like they did in 2017, you just have a collection of good players.
Well, and that's what we're going to get into coming up next, is really specifically the supporting coaching staff, because you mentioned Doug Peterson's coaching tree, and he hasn't really been able to, you know, rebuild that since he lost Frank Reich specifically and John DeFilippo. Chris Mortensen of ESPN thinks that, you know, like you said, in typical Jeffrey Lurie fashion, he agrees with your sentiment that if the Eagles miss the playoffs, you could see a big shakeup within the coaching staff not named Doug Peterson. That's barring a playoff miss. If they make it, does that give them an excuse to stay complacent and keep those guys? So you're really weighing here what you want out of this 2019 season, what you want the result to be. Do you want that significant change at the risk, at the cost of missing the playoffs, or would you rather get into the postseason and make things happen? So I want to get into that with you coming up next, because the Eagles still, it's such a weird thing, Gino. They're in between. Right now they're picking 12th, so they have a really good chance at, you know, getting a top 10 pick, which is like CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy territory, or, hey, we also can win out and still make the postseason. So, like, they're just smack dab in the middle of these two very different scenarios. So, you know, I feel like fans this week are kind of going back and forth with what they prioritize.
Yeah, I totally agree, and that's kind of where I'm at with this as well, because, yeah, we can get Carson in the playoffs and get him in a playoff game, but, I mean, we saw what happened against Seattle. Do you really see it going any differently?
Right.
Who really knows? But yeah, I mean, anything can happen on any given day. We saw that terrible NFC West when they had the, what was it, 7-9 Seahawks against the 8-7 Rams to go and play New Orleans, and that was the beast mode game.
It was.
They came out and they shocked the world, literally sent a shock into the world with beast mode. Who knows? That could happen again. We shocked the world in 2017. It is a mentality in the Eagles organization, but I just haven't seen it in 2019, and I don't know if we're going to see it with this collection of talent and with this collection of coaches.
And we'll get further into that coming up next. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast, a Wednesday edition of the show with Lou DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. Don't go anywhere. Coming up next, playoffs versus potential guaranteed change within the organization. What do you want? We're going to get into that next. This is Locked On Eagles. We'll be right back. Today's podcast is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, this isn't just for all of you out there who can't perform. It's for anyone who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Listen up. It's Blue Chew. Blue like the color blue. It's prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So there's no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, none of that awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our Locked On Eagles listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment for free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BLUE BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the Locked On Eagles podcast today. All right, everybody, welcome back in. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase here alongside Gino Camilleri, and we're getting into really what we want the Eagles to prioritize right now. Obviously, the players, the coaches, they're going to try to get into the playoffs. And, Gino, really, because a lot of their jobs could depend on it. Everyone knows this Eagles team needs significant change in the offseason. Like, regardless of the playoffs, even if they make it, even if they make a deep run, like, I want a new defensive coordinator. I want a new supporting offensive coaching staff. You know, you can blame execution on a lot of it for sure. Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills at corner, the regression of Nelson Agholor and Alshon Jeffrey. But the regression of a lot of these players, man, the lack of trust or development of others, you know, like Mac Hollins, Sidney Jones, the lack of trust in Rasul Douglas and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, Miles Sanders still not fully getting unleashed. That falls to me a lot on the supporting staff. And that includes Mike Groh, Jim Schwartz, Carson Walsh, Corey Unlin, and Press Taylor. I mean, you're a guy that's mentioned this guy's name a few times on the show, and it's defensive line coach Philip Daniels. I mean, just look what he's done for Josh Sweat, Derek Barnett, Anthony Rush, Higgins, who now is with the New England Patriots. Before he left, he was making plays. Deshaun Hall, when given the opportunity, is normally always efficient on the field. That's what you need in your supporting coaching staff, is a guy that can impact positive change within his young players that you see significant growth in. And you just do not see that right now within this coaching staff across the board on both sides of the football. So it's like, all right, if they make the playoffs, and let's say they get a home playoff game in the wild card round and they get beat bad by the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. But that gives Doug Peterson and Howie Roseman the excuse that we're going to hang on to Jim Schwartz and a lot of these guys. All right, maybe then the playoffs isn't worth it. I keep battling back and forth with this, is do I want that, or do I want just Carson Wentz to get that monkey off his back and play in a game? I think I still lean towards making the playoffs because I want to give them enough credit that they'll have the foresight to still make coaching changes. And it's just, I think, again, for me with Wentz, that'll just be so big for his confidence just to get one postseason game under his belt.
Yeah, I absolutely think you made a lot of great points there. And to look at this organization right now, this is a fork in the road. We're sitting here at a fork in the road, and it's a big decision to be made. There are a lot of impactful decisions that are going to weigh heavy on this team for many years to come during this season and the offseason. And two teams that I look at that we can take example from, the good and the bad. I'll say the bad first, the Dallas Cowboys. You look at the Dallas Cowboys, they have potentially a franchise quarterback in Dak Prescott. Some are more sold on him than others, but we'll leave that conversation for another day. You have Amari Cooper, who is potentially going to leave in free agency. Byron Jones, who potentially is going to leave in free agency. You have a lot of coaches like Richard, who have gotten head coaching gig lined up probably in this offseason. They'll have a couple interviews. But they're continuing to just leave Jason Garrett there and not tear the pieces off in places which they should and fix the areas of need which they need to be fixed. Yes, they brought in Cooper, but are they even going to re-sign him? He was a one-year fix, and now you're all in year. You're sitting at 6-6 and potentially have a chance to lose the division if you lose to Philadelphia.
Right.
So that is an organization that took the wrong direction, in my opinion. One that took the right direction, the Seattle Seahawks. They had Russell Wilson. They had their guy Pete Carroll. They've had coaches come and go, but they've got the guys in that building to support both their quarterback and both of their coach, which are the two most instrumental pieces of a football team. I mean, look at when you talk about the New England Patriots. Who are the two people you always talk about? The coach and quarterback.
It's a two-man dynasty.
That's literally it, and I see that in Doug and Carson, and he had it in 2017. He just needs a little creativity, and I believe Doug is somebody that will adapt his philosophies. He just has a lot of people in that building who have said yes to Doug for a long time. He needs guys from the outside that will come in and help him out. I mean, you look at what Schottenheimer has done for that Seattle team. I mean, he's just done wonders and rejuvenated Russell Wilson's career. What's to say they can't bring in a guy like Jay Gruden and can come in here and call plays? Or you have a defensive coordinator like Ron Rivera who can come here and scheme up a Jim Johnson-esque type defense? Who knows?
Right.
Just you can't. I keep mentioning this word insanity because it is, because they're doing the same thing over and over again. You bring back Jordan Matthews. He didn't work the first couple times. He didn't work again. You sign Band-Aids like Orlando Scandrick and Akeem Spence. They worked one time, they didn't work the last time, and they didn't work this time. So they have to adapt their philosophy. And teams like Seattle that are able to adapt, unlike teams like the Dallas Cowboys, who we've seen just, they're kind of in this mediocrity realm for the longest time since they won their VHS tape Super Bowls. Seattle has been in playoffs. They've only missed the playoffs one time since Russell Wilson has been there. That's the type of team you need to build, and you need to do that by being proactive rather than reactive. Because if you fall 2 to 3 years behind the ball, you're going to turn into a team like Cincinnati and Miami, who are falling into complete rebuilds. They had a team with Dalton in Cincinnati who went to, what, 4 straight wildcard games? Didn't win one of them. Because you know why? They kept Marvin Lewis. They kept everything the same. They didn't make changes. You can't let that happen.
Well, and that's the thing, too, with Doug's not only off the... I mean, this offseason is going to tell a lot based on his on-the-field regression as a play caller, really more so the focus on analytics kind of being abandoned, and then off the field, too. Like, regardless of what happens with the playoffs, I'm nervous that even if they miss it, they're still going to keep Jim Schwartz, and they're going to use this, you know, excuse of, well, look, he's top 10 in these statistical categories. I mean, to me, Gino, almost every defensive stat outside of the front four is lying to you right now. I mean, this is a guy still that has his defense playing so undisciplined. He does not adjust on personnel weakness. I mean, God forbid he uses cover two. God forbid. I mean, I was laughing today during his press conference when they asked him, hey, did you think about using your tallest, most physical, lengthiest cornerback in the red zone against Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki when Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills are getting beat over and over again on these 50-50 balls? And Jim Schwartz comes out with this laughable quote that Darby and Mills, they've made those plays before. I mean, tell me, Gino, one time. I mean,
I would
love to see the highlight reel. I tweeted this out of Ronald Darby stopping these 50-50 balls against corner or receivers that have like 5 inches on the guy. I mean, it doesn't happen. So for a player, for a coach like that specifically, Ron Rivera, he might get a head coaching job still, but I just, that's the thing. If it's going to depend on them making the playoffs, whether or not they keep Jim Schwartz, that's when I kind of am like, all right, this team, to get where they really want to go, they need that significant change. It's just such a, again, a hard back and forth, because you could get a home playoff game, and you never know what you could do against Jimmy Garoppolo. Maybe Jimmy Garoppolo has a big-time stinker in a playoff game, and the Eagles are right there. Just like last year, they're back in the second round of the playoffs. So, again, it's the optimist in me, but I just think it's, you know, you talked about how important the coach and the quarterback is, and getting Carson Wentz playoff experience, to me, is maybe priority number one right now. So that's why I would still say, and again, because it's me hoping that this team again has enough foresight, they have enough realization that these coaches, like, there has to be a change anyway, but maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope that's just an excuse, and you would hope that we don't follow in the footsteps of the Dallas Cowboys and just let a guy like Jason Garrett run your franchise into the ground.
For 8 years.
You can't let a guy like Jim Schwartz and his defense just continue to let you down, and Mike Groh continue to let you down, because it is a shame that a guy like Golden Tate goes to the Giants and all of a sudden has a rejuvenated season because he has somebody that can scheme him open. It's just, you look at a guy like Mike Groh, who has had Pro Bowl caliber talent in Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Aguilar when he was good, and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside now, and it took him this long to get him onto the field, and it took Greg Ward how many weeks to beat out guys off the street when he's been in the building the whole year.
Yeah,
it's really crazy to me that there's a clear misunderstanding of how to evaluate talent at a few positions on this football team, especially wide receiver and cornerback. I think that has been clear over the franchise's history, especially within the last decade. And two, the guys that they're putting in there just don't coach the talent well. I mean, if you had a guy that could scheme open an air raid style offense for Carson Wentz and implement some north-south runs and just continue to work this screen game and just scheme guys open, he would be having an MVP caliber year. I mean, if he could get Alshon Jeffrey 120 yards a game and get JJ involved like he has and scheme Nelson Aguilar open, because that's the only way he can catch a football. They did big things, and they did that in 2017 under that exact paradigm. But now they've taken a step back, and it's like they need creativity. They need somebody to come in here and shake things up. They need heads to roll, and you have to lead by example. And if Jeffrey Lurie, who I have the most respect for of many human beings on this planet, especially with the things he does off the field for autism and everything else, he is not a guy that likes to sit around and wait for things to happen. He's a go-getter. I believe if he knows what's best for this team, he'll take things into his own hands.
Well, and I hope so, too, because Jim Schwartz has personnel power, too. I mean, that's something we got to talk about. When you see a lot of these guys that are having significant amount of snaps on the defense or offense, right, and then they get cut the next week, and you talk about where is that divide, like you're saying, where is this difference, this differentiation of talent evaluation. And you see, well, the scouts, hey, they recommended Jamie Collins, but here's Jim Schwartz saying, no, I want Zach Brown. And then he's terrible, and, you know, he gets cut. So for me, it's like when a coordinator has that much say and that much power, he's got to be held accountable. And the same thing with, you know, again, you can't just let execution just get a pass for sure. Like Ronald Darby, Jalen Mills, Sidney Jones, those guys don't get a pass, but you look at a Sidney Jones and you look at Corey Undlin and you're saying, what has given you the right to try to develop these young players with potential for so many years when you don't have one guy on your belt, like on your track record, that you can say, like, I'm a big part of his success. Like, there's not one guy.
Yeah, I completely see that. And I tweeted it the other day. I said, either the scout or the wide receiver coach who gets the wide receivers up to play in Pittsburgh, which is just seems to be one gem after another. I mean, now you have Deontay Johnson and Washington and Juju Smith-Schuster, and you go back to the Antonio Browns and Mike Wallace's. It's like they just continue to spit out gems at that position. I would pay him all the money in the world. Pay him all the money in the world, because you clearly have a lacking of understanding of how to coach up wide receivers properly to get them to fit into your scheme. There just is clearly a differentiation of opinion and what is being taught and how they're bringing these players into the system. Because, I mean, the biggest example of it is Golden Tate, who I mentioned a few minutes ago. You bring in a guy who, in theory, should help your team. But you have a coaching staff that just simply doesn't know how to use that type of player. It's just, to me, there are gaps and there's inefficiencies on this football team that need to be addressed sooner rather than later. And we are into that later period, in my opinion.
Yeah, like the two big ones for me on the offensive side, you know, are Golden Tate, like you mentioned, and then this year, Mack Hollins playing so much more than J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Like, yes, Arcega-Whiteside, he wasn't great week two or week three, but the fact that you didn't let him on the field outside of run plays for 2 months, and now you see him making the biggest plays for a wide receiver in back-to-back-to-back weeks, you're sitting there like, what were they doing? How do they not have the understanding of how much better he was than Mack Hollins, who now is cut? He's not even on the team. Like, that's where it gets frustrating, and a lot of that, you definitely, like, you can't let Howie Roseman get off, you can't let Doug Peterson get off on that, but you got to look at Carson Walsh, you got to look at Mike Groh, and you got to say to yourself, you know, what is happening there? Because that's where I think the concern is for me, for sure. So that, once again, is where we're kind of divided, I think, the fan base is. I think most of us still want to make the playoffs for sure because of where the expectations were with this team. For Carson Wentz, you can win the division and get a home game. But I think at the same time, most smart fans realize that this team is not getting back to a Lombardi trophy until there is significant improvement in that coaching staff, like you said, for sure.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, because it takes a team. It doesn't take a Carson Wentz. As much as people want to put the blame on him, it doesn't take a Fletcher Cox. It takes a team. This isn't golf. This isn't a one-man sport. This is 22 guys, coordinators, coaches, GMs, personnel. Like, it takes everything. This is a puzzle. That's why it is one of the most intriguing sports to write about and to think about and to read about, because there are so many elements, so many X factors that go into it. And just because something worked one time, much like 2017 did, doesn't mean it's going to work again.
True.
And that's why you have to continue to evolve. And the theory of Darwinism holds true in every facet of life. Adapt or die.
100%. I think that's a good way to end segment two. Gino, we got one more here to go on this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, and I want to get into Doug Peterson and where his role in this, his responsibility in all of this is, because of course he's the head coach. You know, he picks the majority of his staff and personnel. He's got, you know, say in that too. You know, you look at Jim Schwartz, has personnel say, so we'll get into that side of this conversation coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. And guys, we are sponsored today by MyBookie. Between the football season right now, the NBA, and the start of college basketball, it's time to get off the sidelines and get in on the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, you can try the parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid. We'll be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Eagles fans across the globe, it's Lou DiBiase alongside Gino Camilleri right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Gino, we talked about the coaching staff, the supporting coaching staff, you know, Jim Schwartz, Mike Rowe, Press Taylor, Carson Walsh, Corey Unlin. Just outside of Philip Daniels, it's been a very disappointing season, really back-to-back seasons for the supporting coaching staff that's, you know, had the responsibility of filling in some big gaps that were left by John DeFilippo and Frank Reich. They certainly had a lot of influence on Doug Peterson and his offensive philosophy and his play calling in 2017 when they won a championship. But people are kind of like, you know, I think everyone understands there needs to be changes in this coaching staff. I do sense a lot of doubt now, though, in Doug Peterson and his future with the team. And I don't know, for me, Gino, I still think that's kind of nuts. People are using the 2017 leash like he has, saying, you know, he's not going to get fired because of that Super Bowl win, so he's still got years to go. I feel like they're kind of just ignoring what happened last year, too, though. I mean, they use the early 2018 struggles to prove their point and act as if that playoff run just didn't happen. I mean, he's had two deep playoff runs in back-to-back years. For me, it's much more a problem with he needs to realize that the coaches around him are not getting the job done.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you on that, and I wouldn't put him under the same leash as, like, a guy like Wentz, in my opinion. Like, he is this franchise. Like, he probably will surpass Doug Peterson. Like,
I assume, yeah.
All intents and purposes, we'll call a spade on that. But the thing is, does Doug want to be here for Carson's tenure? Is he willing to say, hey, as much as I like Mike Groh as a person, as much as I like Jim Schwartz as a person, as much as I like Press Taylor and Carson Walsh and Ken Flagel and whoever other position coach you want and whatever other run game coordinator or pass game coordinator, whatever nonsense total you want to give this coach, as much as I like you, we're not getting it done. I mean, it's tough to look at what you had in Frank Reich and DeFilippo and that great brain think that they had on offense and kind of just see how much you've taken a step back. And Doug Peterson is huge on his self-scouting, and he looks at his 2017 tape, I would hope. I just don't know how he's looking at what he sees in 2019 and saying, well, why can't we use it? Not the same plays, but like concepts. Like, you aren't seeing as many guys in motion, and if you are, it's Nelson Aguilar, and you aren't seeing as many of these checking guys out wide and bringing tight ends back in line, and you're just not seeing as much creativity. You kind of just know how this Eagles team is going to throw their offense at you, and they really need guys from the outside that can look and say, hey, how you guys have been doing it, yeah, there are some good things, but there are some things that we can do a lot better. And that's why I love the idea of bringing a guy from, like, the Big 12. Or, I mean, look at what Cliff Kingsbury. He wasn't the best coach at all at Texas Tech, but they just believe that he could design an offense that could fit well with Kyler Murray. And look at what's happening. You see flashes of it, and I only expect that team to get better as the years go on. You need that creative juice, because the Eagles were the biggest and best thing in 2017. They're a stale bag of chips right now. They're a French fry that's been under the seat for a few 2 months. You know, it's like they've been there, done that. Teams aren't scared of them. They aren't afraid of you. I mean, the Miami Dolphins had players, Christian Wilkins, openly mocking you. You aren't the Eagles that you were 2 years ago, and you have to look yourself in the mirror. I wish you would have did that after the Super Bowl and checked yourself at the door before you came into 2018, and now we're saying you should have checked yourself at the door before you came into 2019, and now we're saying it before 2020, before we know it's going to be 2030 and we're another decade gone without a Super Bowl, and that just can't happen, in my opinion.
Yeah, maybe it's the third time's the charm here when it comes to Doug Peterson realizing that he needs to make changes within this coaching staff. But, you know, he also needs to improve himself. I mean, he's got to stop abandoning analytics. The amount of second and 10 runs they've done, Geno, and at the same time ignoring the run on third and short is mind-boggling. They got to be way less predictable. They are very predictable. But again, at the same time, I think much like Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson has been at the mercy of just piss poor personnel around him. On the sidelines, like we've been talking about all episode, but also on the field. I mean, it's hard to get creative when you have to go solely 12 personnel because you have one or two wide receivers that can ever make a play for you. So that's the thing with me is with Doug Peterson, I still believe that he is a really good play caller. I think with an improved coaching staff, with some new fresh minds, you get him a new offensive coordinator, a new quarterbacks coach, a new guy to develop those wide receivers, you get him some speed back in this offense, and just some health, and I think because it happened, again, we talked about 2017 now, him and Wentz and all these guys need to get back to that form. I refuse to ignore what happened at the end of last year. They did turn it around. They did get hot. The offense got hot, and they nearly made the NFC Championship. So you can talk about the 2018 struggles for the first, 10 weeks of the season, but you can't just pretend like the end didn't happen. So I see that with Doug, and I know that I've had 2 years of that. So I'm still maybe a little bit more confident than others that, he and Wentz can turn this around if they make the necessary changes.
I absolutely think so. I mean, there's no reason to believe that Doug Peterson won't adapt. Like you said, he's huge into analytics, and if he has people that can convince him to do things in that mindset, there's no reason that he can't change in his ways, and you just can't get set in your ways, and I don't believe that's who Doug Peterson is. And until he proves me wrong, I use that term a lot, until Howie Roseman proves me wrong, until Carson Wentz, until Doug Peterson proves me otherwise, I have all the reason to believe that he can lead his guys. But I've seen what the guys around him have done, and I don't believe them. And Doug Peterson has to look himself in the eye and say, if I want to keep my job,
right,
I may have to get rid of a few guys that I do like as people. But
because he can be a great play caller. It doesn't matter, though. Like, if he keeps those as bad as coaches as they are, and we're blaming them, if Doug Peterson keeps them, like, that's on him, too, though.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's part of being held accountable. I mean, right. There are times I always look back to my dad had a restaurant. I worked there since I was 12 years old. I always had friends that would work there, right? I would help all my buddies. Hey, you want to come and get a job?
Yeah.
And how many times of my friend not showing up for work or not calling in to say he was sick or coming in late? How many times could I cover for that person until I was the one who looked like an idiot? I think one of the best quotes ever, Jim Kelly. Show me your friends and I will show you who you are. If Doug Peterson has a bunch of dummies around him that aren't doing anything different ways, Doug Peterson might be the dummy. I mean,
exactly.
A duck is a duck and you can't convince me otherwise.
It's going to be a huge offseason for him. It's going to be a big-time final 4 weeks to see what he can do here. That's my stance right now on Doug Peterson, is that I think a lot of it more so is on the execution. I think it's on the supporting staff around him. But that does fall on Doug Peterson, too, when you're the head coach. I mean, he handpicked Jim Schwartz. He decided to keep Mike Groh and promote him as offensive coordinator when he lost. Here's the thing, man. Like, John DeFilippo got fired from the Minnesota Vikings. You could have maybe made him an offer to be your OC, but Doug was cool with who they kept in-house.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't even mentioned this yet, the idea of maybe somebody else calling plays in situational downs,
Right.
I mean, other than Mike Groh.
Good Lord, I couldn't imagine him doing that.
I mean, why not? Andy Reid offered him to do that one season when they – who'd they lose to? The Patriots, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they made it to the second round.
The second round, yeah. I mean, just, yes, you have to trust your guys, but trust the ones that know what they're doing. I would like to see some guys come in here and Doug give them a little leeway. Bring somebody in here that's going to design plays and be a red zone situational pass caller or
right.
a play caller, Just change it up. You just can't keep doing what you are doing. And that's the definition of insanity. And this team is driving me, it's driving you, it's driving everybody else in Eagles Nation crazy, and they need to change something before the city of Philadelphia just absolutely loses their heads.
One thing I will say that I'm not buying, and I saw one beat writer say this the other day, that he questions Doug Peterson, his impact, like his message still impacting the locker room. I don't like that. I don't really agree with that. People use that phrase all the time, like, has the coach lost the locker room when it comes to his message?
Has the quarterback elevated his team? Same thing. Like, it means
nothing. Yeah, I mean, to me, like, if the players need some catchy new phrase each year to get motivated, or, like, if this team is tuning out Doug Peterson after the back-to-back playoff runs, I mean, that to me isn't on Doug Peterson. So with the influence that he gives his leaders to, with the power he gives his players in the locker room, that's one thing that I don't buy, is that off the field that he has lost the attention, he has lost the passion to want to play for him from these players. I don't see that at all. I think more so, like me and you are talking about right now, the issues are on the field. The issues are who he's picking as, you know, his eyes and ears as part of making the game plan week in and week out on offense.
Yeah, you really have to look at the people around you sometime and say, hey, this might not be the best option. And you have to get yourself out of a quote-unquote toxic relationship. The Eagles have a toxic relationship with Jim Schwartz. They've put out defenses that have just underperformed time and time again and let this team down time and time again. And on both hands, I bet you can count at least 5 to 6 times the last 2 years that this defense has let this team down when the offense has done more than enough to win a game. The Dolphins didn't score, what, over 13 points the entire season in a
game?
That's
right,
13 or 17 points. They go out and score 30-some-odd points.
They almost put up 40.
they should have put up 50. Lou, they should have put up 50 points on this defense for how bad that they were. If you even mention that the offense didn't do enough to beat Miami or didn't do enough to beat Atlanta, I mean, they dropped the football, of course, didn't do enough to beat Detroit outside of the drop. They did. I mean, it's just frustrating, man. It really will drive you crazy thinking about this stuff, that if a few bounces went right, much like 2017 did, they're in a better spot. But, hey, I said it a couple days ago, when you're a bad team, those little bad issues turn into huge bad issues, and you are recognizing all of those flaws in this Eagles team as we speak.
I'm most concerned, honestly, when it comes to Doug Peterson and, you know, his self-evaluation process in the offseason and talking about, you know, with the front office, what needs to be done with his coaching staff. You know, I feel like defense is the part that maybe he'll get complacent with keeping, you know, a Jim Schwartz around, because he's not a defensive-minded coach. And the minute he came in here in 2016, he gave Jim Schwartz, you know, the keys to the defense. Like, he runs that show. And Howie Roseman also said, hey, Jim Schwartz, here, handpick your players too. That's why Ronald Darby came in. That's why Nigel Bradham came in, Zach Brown, Andrew Sandejo. I mean, the list goes on and on. Malik Jackson this year, he wanted another defensive tackle next to Fletcher Cox. So that's where I'm concerned with the most, is that I really hope Doug just, he doesn't be like, I'm the offensive guy, I'm going to handle that. Yeah, I should make some changes there. But with defense, like, I know Jim Schwartz, I won a championship with him, and that's what we're going to move forward with. That's the part I'm concerned with the most.
Let's hope it doesn't happen again. I mean, I really don't want to see another offseason where this happens. I would love to see them tape what they did in 2015 with Chip Kelly and get the guys off the roster week 16 if they are out of contention after that Dallas game. Just clean house then. Send a message, because the message that's going on in that locker room right now is not one that I want to continue to see for the near future.
Absolutely. That's a good way to recap and put a final lid on this edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into today's edition of the show. If you missed any of our past podcasts, you can always check them out on any podcast platform or on LockedOnEagles.com. And the conversation always continues on Twitter. Follow us at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiase, L-O-E, and Gino_LOE. For my co-host, Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.